"What is a game?" Mark said. "It's tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow. It's the possibility of infinite rebirth, infinite redemption. The idea that if you keep playing, you could win. No loss is permanent because nothing is permanent, ever."
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are a podcast bringing you the reviews on Book Talk's most popular books and whether or not you should fit them into your busy schedule. I'm Catherine.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Casey. Today we are reviewing a book that has gotten amazing reviews all across Book Talk. It is Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow by Gabrielle Zevin. And it follows the journey. It's primarily about three friends, but we're introduced to two of them first. And the main character's name is Sam. And he meets Sadie in a hospital when he's a kid. And they kind of have a friendship and then have a falling out. And then reconnect later when they're in college and end up making video games together. So a lot of the book is about them creating video games and falling in love with video games and where their relationship goes from there. Yeah.
A lot of video game referencing.
Yes. I feel like we just did Taylor Jenkins Reid's Carrie Soto, which is like so much tennis. This is like so much early internet language. But do you guys have reviews?
I do. I will go first. So I found this 3-star review on Goodreads by a user named Emma, who seems to really love books because her profile photo is a color coordinated rainbow bookshelf and her in front of it. So thought it was really cool. So she says 3 things. I did not like any of these 3 main characters to start, and I grew to intensely dislike them. I could not put this book down. 3, it has been 4 months since I read this book. I cannot in good faith put this review off any longer, and I still do not know if I liked this or not. That's all I got. Bottom line, you take the wins with the losses in life.
I admit I find parts of that relatable.
That's why I chose it.
Okay, I have 2. I'm just going to read 1 line out of one of them, though. So the first one, and this is just for fans. This is just for people who have already read the book. Phoebe left a 1-star review on Goodreads, and she said, "I would choose dysentery over this book." So
that's a good joke.
Right. But the one I'm going to read like the whole paragraph of is a 2-star from Antonio on Goodreads as well. He says, "I feel very ambivalent about this one. Some very great parts, particularly the first half, but then long and tedious for a greater part. It loses itself and never finds its balance again. Such a disappointment."
Okay, well, I have a slightly more positive review. This is a 4.75-star review on Storygraph. "The author's writing is simply beautiful. I have never read such complex yet clear descriptions of characters, their complex relationships, and their backstories. I love the way even the most troubled characters were, in a way, lovable and undeniably human. The clear knowledge about video games is a central plot point." Sorry. "The clear knowledge about video games as a central plot point drove the individual and main stories forward, and I was thoroughly engaged throughout the whole novel." Not saying I agree with everything in it, but I really appreciated the point on the complex, well-developed characters.
Yeah, this book lives and dies by its characters, I would say.
Well, don't jump to the first question yet. Overall Goodreads rating at 4.2 out of 5. Amazon 4.4 out of 5. Before we get into plot or character driven, what are your reviews?
I can go first because I actually think we all thought I would like this book the most, and I don't think that ended up happening. So I also live and die by character development. I say it all the time. The only books I like are books that I think have really complex, unique characters, which is why I absolutely loved the first half of this book. I thought they were so interesting. I loved their relationships. I loved watching their relationships change as they got older. And like the first part where they start making the video games, I was like in this book. The first half of it was probably like a 5-star read for me. You know, I don't care if there's no plot. It doesn't bother me. I love the characters. About halfway through, I started getting really confused. All of a sudden, the characters had all these conflicts that I felt like I wasn't really introduced to. Where the characters ultimately end up, I felt like there wasn't a lot of like prefacing or explanation or understanding for. Like, it's just like around halfway, I just started being confused. I was like, I don't understand how we got here. Which I think is actually why the book flopped for me, is I felt like ultimately the character development I did not find convincing. I did not feel like we were like led along the road through the entire story, which is why I chose the review I did, because it says like the book kind of lost the plot and never got it back, and that's kind of how I felt. So I gave it a 3-star review. I do think the writing is excellent. I would definitely read other books by this author. I just think that like it's more of an attempt at literary fiction than like a successful execution of literary fiction. And so I think she's an author to watch, but I don't think this is the book to read.
Yeah, I'm like nodding my head along because that's like exactly what my thoughts were. I was also a 3-star. I said in my Goodreads view, I'd probably give it a 3.5 because like, I feel like I give a lot of things 3 stars that like are not equal. So I feel like I have to give it a little bit of a leg up because it's better writing than a lot of things I give 3 stars to. But I totally agree where it's like they were really developing these characters and time was moving very slowly in the first part, even though there was some time jumps in there, which I was semi-confused by. But then at the end, it felt like it was skipping years at a time, like 5 years, 10 years, to where I didn't even realize they were 30 years old until someone finally said it like 3 times. And I was like, oh, my God, like how old are these people? And they finally said, oh, yeah, they're 31. I'm like, what? I thought they were in their 20s. Like, what is this? They just moved to California. Like, it was just very, I got confused at the end and I had to like go back and re-listen to it because I was listening to the audiobook because I was like, what's going on? So
I was just going to say, because this is the exact thing that happened to me. I actually flipped back through the book looking for stuff I missed because I genuinely felt like I had missed pages and I hadn't. So I don't know if everyone was confused or I just like missed stuff, but I was confused at a certain point.
So I was not confused. I gave it 4 stars. I wouldn't like write home about this book, but I really appreciated the writing. I appreciated the character development. I didn't find the time jumps confusing. Unlike Casey, I preferred the second half because it was a little more action-y, but you know, I love a little bit more action-y. I also really love the beginning development of Sam and Sadie's relationship in the hospital. I thought that was so beautifully written. And I don't know, I just thought it was a unique story. I wasn't like a huge gamer growing up, but like, you know, I love me my Nintendo games, gaming light, but I don't know. I didn't mind it. I know a lot of people who say it's like their favorite book ever. I'm not there, but I appreciate the depth put into this book. I do think it went on a little too long, but I still gave it 4 stars.
All right. Well, we already kind of answered what's normally our first question, which is plot or character driven. It is very character driven. Yeah, there's a few plot points that kind of throw chaos onto the characters, but most of it is kind of just on the characters' backs.
Yeah, it's their interactions with each other. That's the whole story.
Agreed. Like the whole story is Sam and Sadie and then other people who come and go from their lives and their little friendship.
Yeah, the next one is, have you read other books by the author? I saw in the reviews she does have at least one other book, and some reviews, there aren't a ton of like negative reviews for this book, but some of the ones I saw mentioned liking her other book better. But I don't know much about it.
Yeah, I'm the same. I haven't read any of her other books, but I'd be curious because she's a good writer.
I also have not read any of her other books. Yeah, I enjoyed her writing. I wouldn't be opposed to it. I think One of the more loaded questions that we have for our intro is, how was the pacing of the book and how long did it take you to read? Because despite liking this book, it took me a hot second to finish. And I picked it up and put it down and picked it up and put it down. And then I finally just sat down and like made myself read it, because it does meander and time jump and go back and forth. And so it's kind of easy to set it down and forget about it. But so yeah, it's I think the pacing's a little rough, and like I said, goes on a little too long, and it probably took me, I think it was like 2 or 3 weeks. Like, I picked up other stuff in between.
I think it took me only like 5 days to read. I blew through the first half of the book, which I already mentioned was like, I thought was the highlight for me. The second half took me quite a while to get through. So I think I read the first half actually in a day, and then I read the second half over the course of like 4 days. And I probably would have read it even slower, but I had to have it finished for this podcast. So I had a deadline. Or else I think it would have taken me even longer.
Yeah, it looks like, because I got it from the library, but then I was so busy with other books that my loan went due. So I started it on the 27th and then finished it of April, and then finished it in the beginning of May, like 2 weeks later. So it did take me a good 2 to 3 weeks to get into this book. I actually had to listen to half of it on audiobook because I didn't want to have to pay for it. And I have an Audible account that I steal from my mother. So shout out to Stacey Finnerty for allowing me to use that. And so I listened to it the rest of the way, but I wouldn't have probably listened to it as quickly as I did if it weren't for this podcast. So the pacing is not fast.
It's definitely like a meandering story. I do agree with what Caitlin said earlier, that the second half just has more plot points. But that didn't help me read it faster. So, yeah.
Because there's plot points, and then like it's the fallout from those plot points that takes actually a while. Mm-hmm. Like, those were some of the longer chapters, was the fallout.
Yeah, that's exactly where I think it goes on too long, is in the fallout of kind of the peak of the action. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I get it.
It takes forever. I think I actually know there's a specific chapter that comes to mind of like absolutely destroying the pacing, and I'm pretty sure we're all thinking of the same one. We're all nodding. But we won't talk about that till the spoiler section. So the last question for our intro: would you watch a movie or TV show of this book?
I think it could be a good movie.
I think it could too. It gives me sort of the same vibes as like, it gives me kind of like Fault in Our Stars or something like that vibes, kind of like a heartfelt relationship kind of thing. I think you could have fun with the video game scenes that you don't get like by picturing it in your head in the book, but I don't still know if I would watch it.
Yeah. I kind of agree. I think under the right director and with the right cast, it has potential to be really good. I don't know that I would be jumping out of my seat to be first in line to see it, though. I can see it being good, but I can also see it being kind of just like redundant.
Yeah, it actually looks like Paramount Pictures purchased the rights to adapt this into a movie for $2 million. Hmm. And they are bringing the author on to write the script. So I'm always a huge proponent of bring the author as like an executive producer in these kind of situations so that they have creative input. So I think that will be interesting to see if they adapt it.
Can I just say, it's like TV or movie, like writers, producers, directors can't come up with their own ideas anymore. I feel like every single movie coming up is from a book we're reading.
Yeah.
Agreed.
I'm convinced. It's just like now the movie industry is using the book industry as a crutch because they're like, okay, if this book is really popular, we can rely on that fan base to watch a movie. And then we'll also capture the fan base that heard about it, but is too lazy to actually read it. And mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, but you can also make your own stuff still. We don't need to adapt every single popular book.
Yeah, like come up with your own ideas, y'all.
As an author, though, I get it, because they don't make money like that unless they make a movie, and then they're making money like that. So respect, but I'm a little annoyed with it as well. It's like,
yeah. Book Talk, you have the movie industry in your grips.
Yes. The movie industry, the publishing industry, like,
we should start like hyping up some really shit book and see if it gets picked up as a movie.
That's diabolical.
It is. I think I actually was thinking about this the other day. I'm sorry, I'm eating. So if this sounds weird, I just like apologize, but a girl's got to eat. I don't know. I think half of things that are really popular because they're good and they're genuinely enjoyable. And the other half is just like marketing and groupthink. And so that's what I think of this podcast as being, is being like, what of the popular stuff is actually really good? And what of it is just bandwagon pushed by publishers shit? And so,
hot we'll take.
See. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, think about it. The movie industry, the most recent movie they've published is the Mario movie. So,
which they stole from a video game.
Exactly. So they're not coming up with their own ideas. That's for sure.
Yeah. They're doing everything now. Even that TV show that's really popular, what is it called, that's based on the video game?
Oh,
I want the guy Last of Us. Meme. The Last of Us. There we go.
The Last of Us. Yeah, it is.
I was hikey thinking about that during reading this book.
You know, same.
Let's throw in like Chris Pratt and Margot Robbie and you've got a hit.
Jesus.
Every time. Okay, well, we're on this weird tangent now. It's time for the spoiler alert.
My fault. No, it's not.
Excuse me. Oh, shit. We're falling apart. Me specifically.
It was me last time, so.
I have never done it, so I'm very proud of myself. I did not forget the Busy Girls rating.
Okay, whatever. You forgot another stuff, and I remember. I can go ahead and start them. Since I've just embarrassed myself. my Busy Girl rating, I'm going to stick with a 3. I think it's long. The pacing isn't great. I never felt super compelled to like pick it up and put it back down compulsively, but I think it's a good read. I don't not recommend it. It's just that I think for the hype this book got, I was a little disappointed.
Yeah. I'm between a 2 and a 3, but I think I'll go with a 3 because like it's semi short. I mean, it's like 400 pages, which we're reading a lot longer. So I guess that's skewing my mind and the length of things we're reading. But like I didn't get lost as I picked it up and put it back down. I got lost while reading it. That's a different thing. But like I felt like I could pick it up and put it back down. But did I want to? Not totally.
I'm going to agree with the Busy Girls 3. Like you heard me say in my review of the pacing, I just had a hard time like picking it back up anytime I put it down. I think the writing was great and that makes it, you know, worth the read if you're interested in the book. But I agree, the pacing just kind of stumped me and it's not a Busy Girl read. It's a little long.
All right, finally, I'm so excited for our discussion today. So spoiler alert, if you haven't read the book and you're interested in doing so, go read it and then come back for the rest of our discussion. The first question up is something that I would like to comment on. So it's, this book has a general timeline, but it jumps backwards and forwards frequently. I want to like further emphasize the point Catherine brought up that the beginning of the book, the years are a lot closer together. And then in the end, they all of a sudden are jumping quite a bit longer in between the timeline. So the book is mostly linear, then with like flashbacks that like add context in the form of like other chapters. What did you guys think of that?
It wasn't the flashbacks that threw me off. It was the flash forwards where they started talking about, because they wouldn't flash forward into like their own mindsets. It would be interviews that they give in the future post their success, like before they even had started making a game together. they would flash forward of like, well, then Sam said in an interview like this, this and this about like how they had like a falling out or something like that. So I'd just be confused sometimes and it would take a minute to realize, OK, this is at least when they're in their 30s, when they're in their 40s. But then like trying to piece that together after finishing the book, I don't have a complete timeline in my head of where those show up. So that's where I had issues. And then also, like you said, it jumps quite a bit forward in the end. And it's specifically because like the first game, they're working on it really intently. And like you get to see all the processes behind it. But then in the other games, they're just like, okay, we started the game, now it's done. And like in a chapter, it would be done. And like games take many years to design and build out. So like, you know that time is jumping pretty rapidly, but because we got that first game, it felt even shorter because we knew like time was going weirdly.
Yeah, I didn't. Oh,
you go ahead, Caitlin.
I didn't hate the time jumps or anything, but I also just didn't love them. I thought it was fairly straightforward because it's kind of them like remembering things, and that's kind of how mind works. Like you're one place and then your mind takes you somewhere else, and it was connected. I'm like you though, like I didn't love the future ones. I know that I think it was a tool for foreshadowing future conflict, but I also would have just been fine to come up on the conflict and be like, oh no.
Yeah,
like waiting for it.
Okay, you guys, I kind of agree with both of you. This is sort of, I think, the reason why I ended up not liking the book so much. So I agree, like the flashbacks felt really natural and they kind of flowed well. And like, I felt like we always returned to a time that like made sense. And like, for most of the book, I was kind of like catching along fine. And I felt like those were well done. The foreshadowing parts, I think, actually made the second half of the book not make sense to me because I kept looking for these fights that they were supposedly having, and actually almost none of them happen in the narrative. They're just referred to and then the characters are fighting, but like we never actually see like the blowout fights or like the exact tension moments. And to me, that made me feel like I was kind of lost in the character development. Like up until about halfway through the book, I felt like the character's development was so strong and I really liked the characters. And then in the second half, I was a little bit like, I don't understand what's going on. Like, when did Sam become this person? When did Sadie become this person? Like, I don't fully understand what's happening. And I felt like the characters were acting in ways that were really immature and irrational to the point that I felt like it actually didn't fit their character at all. And I didn't feel like we were like brought to the moment where those actions made sense. And so I ended up feeling like just like lost in them. Like I didn't eventually, in the end, I didn't really get who they became. And because of that, the ending just didn't really hit for me. I felt like I lost my way. I stopped caring about them because I didn't get them anymore. And I didn't really empathize with them because of it.
Yeah, it was the move to LA that got me the most, because that was where Sadie realizes like that Sam may or may not have known that Dove was her ex-lover or ex-partner. And I understood her anger in it, but I don't think she ever told him truly about it, except for in one like offhanded comment. But they've never, like, from my recollection of the book, they never had like an actual confrontation where they talked about where they're coming from and why she was being distant with him. Like, she was just like, oh, I'm just going to be distant with him and just be professional almost, but it wasn't acting professional. But it also, these were like such good friends, and they just kind of accepted that each other, they weren't in each other's lives anymore, which just felt really odd. But then they also referenced that they had these fights, and then we didn't see them, like you said. So it was just kind of like, huh? Like, what?
I'm like you though. I don't think they necessarily even fought. Like, they just kind of made stuff up in their heads and had it like an internal argument. I don't know, because Sam was like not there a lot and Sadie was mad at him, and it was because he was like going through his phantom foot pain stuff. And then Sadie was like, you know, like they never explained it to each other, which meant they never really fought about it necessarily in what you think of a traditional fight. It was very passive aggressive, kind of almost just like ghosting each other. And that did get frustrating. I was like, okay, you've had this fight. Oh, you're doing, oh, it's happening again. Oh, you're distant again. Oh, you haven't seen each other in like 5 years, but running the same company. That's the stupidest thing ever.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of where it lost me, because I was like, personally, this is not like any friendship I have ever had. I cannot imagine saying these things to my friends. I cannot imagine treating them this way. For two characters who I really like cared with and identified with in the first half, I was just like, I no longer understand the conflict here and their inability to deal with it. Because for me, I'm not like a super confrontational person. I'm not like the first to like every slight I feel, I like bring it up to my friend's face, like, why did you do that? Like, let's have a reckoning. But also, like, if my friend fully stopped talking to me or had a moment where she accused me of trying to like force me to go see someone who I had a toxic relationship with, at that point, I feel like shit does reach a crisis point where you actually talk about it. And so a big part of the book where I was like, I just no longer believe this friendship, because I don't believe friends behave this way. I actually don't. It's not relatable to me. And I didn't think the book made it relatable. Like, I didn't get it. I didn't understand it. And I would never behave the way they behaved. And so I was just confused, and I kind of lost sympathy for everyone, because I was like, if you disappear for years and don't come into work, and your friend's first response isn't to be like, he had a foot amputation, this is really concerning about his mental health, and is instead to be like, what a lazy fucking asshole, you're not real friends, and that's weird. And so I was just lost.
And like, if you actually think he maliciously forced you to go and ask your ex-professor, ex-boyfriend, mm-hmm. for his programming software so that you would forever be indebted to him and therefore you could never leave him, and he was just okay with that because he wanted to make this video game. Like, if you actually thought that that was his reasoning, then that was never a friend. That's terrible.
There are like three, I think, events in this book that I sort of heavily critiqued as I was reading. And one of them was Sadie just latching on to this idea that Sam had like knowingly wanted her to go talk to Dov, even like understanding that they had like some sort of like toxic relationship. And she really kind of latches onto this with like no proof. It read to me as being completely unhinged and crazy. I was like, I can guarantee you I would not have read it. I don't read the things on CDs. I would have picked it up, put it in the DVD player, and not even noticed it. She even has Mark straight up tell her, like, I don't even think Sam saw the DVD. And she, like, cannot let this go. And it just was so irrational and, like, spiteful. And, like, she was determined to hate Sam. That's what it felt like. And so, and it, like, this one point comes back in every phase of their lives. Like, she can't let it go. And I was like, this is just fucking bizarre to me. Like, I actually don't get it. Like, I fundamentally don't understand her belief in this, like, character flaw of his. And like, again, if there's things he had done in the past that made her believe that he would do this to her, I didn't see them. So I thought it was weird. I was like, I'm sorry, if you're best friends with someone, it is so weird for you to be so willing to believe the worst in them. And that's what it felt like, is they were just willing to see the worst in each other. They were willing to abandon each other. And I didn't get it. I was like, this is a shit ass friendship.
Yeah, I think it comes down to something you learn through their characters is they're both pretty selfish. And I don't know if it's just because they're academic competitive types, but like, they're selfish personally and professionally. Mm-hmm. And that kind of is what gets in the way, I feel like. And then, like, you know, you get towards the end with Marks and Sadie, and Sam is selfish to share his friend and to share Sadie, and Sadie's selfish with Marks then, and blah blah blah. Like, they just can't equally share anything except the same passion for what they do.
I think it's interesting because, like, I totally agree that they're both selfish. The only point that I could totally see being valid on Sadie's point of view is being constantly undermined because you're a female in this industry and, like, your partner, because he's a man, gets all the credit. That would piss me off, even if it's not the man's fault. If he's playing into it at all or is just ignoring it, I would be mad. And I think she rightfully is so mad that he kind of is taking credit for things, whether or not, like, he totally understands the gender dynamics in this. But I think that's the only time where I was like, I think that's justified to be a little angry at this situation and be angry at society for this.
But also, like, if I was mad about that, I'd say something.
Agreed.
Yeah. Like,
that's, you don't go 2 years of not talking and then suddenly be like, well, you were taking the credit.
Yeah. And I guess that's what I'm saying is, like, I think in most friendships, you reach a crisis point where you're forced to just finally address the issue. And I was confused as to why that moment never seemed to happen. Especially because it seemed like they would both at different points be confused as to what the other person was mad at, but then just not talk for 3 years. I was like, you're fucking weird. You're weird for that. It didn't make sense. I did not think it made sense.
Okay, so this brings up kind of their starting story of how they meet in a hospital and how Sadie actually is the first person Sam talks to for like 6 weeks after his car accident that shatters his leg, and he has really a lot of pain. His mother's dead because of it, and so now his grandparents are taking care of him, but he hasn't talked to anyone. He talks to Sadie, and so she keeps coming back to the hospital and gets community service for said visits, that which accumulate to over 600 hours of community service. What did you think about Sadie using Sam as her community service project? Do you think he was justified in being angry, or do you agree with her that it was overblown?
I think it all makes sense. They were little kids. I mean, like, her parents were like, you're getting service hours, and she's like, cool, I'm getting service hours to do something I like. Like, oh, bummer, you know. And then she realizes as she gets older the complexity of it. But, like, I don't know. Like, yeah, Sam should have just, like, pouted for a while and got over it. And I think he was justified to be a little mad. But you don't just, like, end a friendship. But also, they were, like, 10. So, meh.
I don't know. I kind of disagree. I just imagine, like, how lonely Sam was and how badly he really needed someone. And he was so traumatized. And then to find out that this person is kind of treating you like a pet project and not like an actual friend would honestly deeply bother me. I don't know that I would ever recover from it. I feel like that is like friendship ending worthy, especially when you're kids and you don't really have the language to actually like fully talk about why you're so hurt. I understand Sadie's perspective too, which is why I think this is like a good conflict, because you can kind of see both sides where, like, yeah, it didn't seem that deep to her. But I think the fact that she never really takes accountability for how that felt differently to Sam was like the first sort of like sign that the friendship had problems, because Sadie kind of apologizes, but she does the kind of apology where she's like, I'm sorry, but she doesn't really say, like, you know, now that I'm, especially, you know, once they reconvene when they're older, now that I'm older, I understand why this situation felt really different from you. You were going through a lot of really hard stuff, and I understand this made you feel like a charity project when, like, you were really down on yourself. And, like, I'm really sorry I ever did that. I really shouldn't have done it. She's always like, you overreacted. That's basically her whole apology. And so I was honestly never really got over it. I was like, why? I mean, I feel like it's realistic, but I'm also like, that is just kind of like demonstrating their character flaws.
There's a lot of it like brings up in my mind like a lot of privilege in that sense, where she comes from a very like rich family, rich background. And I know like her grandmother went through a lot with like the Holocaust. But she, because she grows up in this very like privileged position and Sam does not, there is like this disparity of how they view the world. And I think she's just, when you think community service, when you're a rich kid, and like, I grew up around rich kids, I was one of those rich kids. So I know like, it's nothing. It's like just something you do to put on a college resume. Like it doesn't mean much, which it should, but it doesn't mean much. So I can see Sadie's point of view, but like when you're taking it back to the person who's receiving that community service, it means a lot more. And so when you're finding out that you were a charity case to a person, that does sting. And there, people are naturally prideful people. So I totally understand. And yeah, I did think it was a good conflict.
I think it sort of leads us into the next question we have. And it's about how Sam's accident and what he experienced in New York with like quite literal body falling from the sky. And how does that affect how he like views the world and interacts with people like Sadie? And I do think there is some unresolved trauma there that no one was equipped to help him deal with. And I think his go-to because of that is just to shut down. And you see it when he's in the hospital as a kid, he doesn't talk to anyone for 6 weeks. And you see it continue as an adult because he just never figured out how to deal with that. And I think he kind of gets stuck with that. It's something he never totally recovers from.
I agree. I feel like you see it. Like he says something at the end of the book that kind of represents his character growth. And he says it to Sadie. And he's like, a mistake I always made was thinking that there was some purity in suffering alone. And he clearly feels like people are just going to disappear. Bad things are just going to happen. And so like, you should deal with pain by yourself and you should get through life by yourself because you don't know like when people will be gone. Which is also why this whole incident with Sadie and the charity hours is so triggering, I think, for him, is it's like, you know, who can you really trust and why is like constantly this like trauma response for him. And we see it again when his leg gets amputated and his inability to actually say I love you to his friends. And his inability to even kind of tell Sadie how he feels throughout their relationship. It's like always kind of this like ghost in their relationship.
Yeah, it's kind of classically male, honestly, of just like never asking for help, trying to hide the pain. And like he says, like when you get to his points of views where he's just like, I just live with a low level of pain. And that's like, he shouldn't have to, like, he should be able to talk about those things. But like, he never had like a therapist and never had like any sort of person to help work through his issues when it comes to trauma and when it comes to pain. So he doesn't really have healthy relationships because of it. So I think it's interesting.
Yeah. And that kind of brings us to Sadie, because one of the biggest sort of conflict points, trauma points in the book for her is when she starts to have to deal with a lot of sexism in the gaming industry. And she's constantly thinking about who's going to take credit for her work, how it's going to look, which are all very, you know, sadly relatable things to think about. And then she also ends up having this relationship with her professor, which is like very unhealthy. How did you guys feel about all that stuff?
First, I love that her first approach was to build solution and just like shock and awe them into submission. Like obviously that didn't solve all her problems, but that game was genius. And that's where I first, I think, really started to kind of be like, okay, I can read this book about video games. But I don't know, I think it was realistic, it was icky, it was kind of hard. Like you saw that she did enjoy her time with her professor in the like outside of the classroom in their sexual relationship, but also like how horrible he was to her by like kept saying like, I'll get divorced, and then like making her do some like weird BDSM stuff. And I don't know. It was kind of cringy to read, and I think that's the point. But you can see where she kind of has trust issues, because the one person who's meant a lot to her in her adult life lies to her constantly.
Yeah. And I do want to point out, so there's two things that sort of heavily connect to issues I have with the book later, with this conflict with Dove or Dove, or however you say his name.
I think it's Dove.
Dove.
He's got a stupid name. Sorry.
Yeah. Stupid name for a stupid guy. So she holds this one instance where she believes Sam might have known that the relationship with Dove was bad against Sam for decades, and forgives Dove and maintains a congenial, friendly, supportive, productive relationship with Dove, who actually fucking abused her, and then doesn't with Sam, who like probably didn't even know. I was like, what?
Right, and it's not like Dove ever apologized or anything. I still don't think he knew what he had done to her. He was just like, man, I let a good one go. And Sadie never corrected him, like, no, you were a piece of shit, I'm glad I left, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, and like, she felt like she couldn't leave. Like, it wasn't until Marks and Sam were like, yeah, we're gonna go to LA, that she was like, finally an excuse to leave him. Like, but because she felt so indebted to him, which is like a terrible balance of power, an abuse of power on Dove's end,
and trapped. She felt so trapped. She felt so trapped that she couldn't even stand up for her own desires and tell him, like, look, I don't want to have the kind of sex that you want to have. Like, she could not stand up for any of her fundamental needs in that relationship. And so this is a point in the book that I think is weak, is that the setup of conflict they have in the first part of the book is really strong. And I really loved it. Like, I mean, I didn't love that it happened, but then there's this point kind of thrown in where you realize that Sadie had an abortion. And I felt like it came out of left field, and B was super unnecessary, and C is then never talked about again. Like, I do not think you should trauma dump random things onto characters that are not needed and then never actually like explore how that particular event impacted them.
When she's like pissy at Sam the whole time for like not understanding it was her relationship with Dove, and then holds this against him the whole time, and then you figure out, but really at that point she was actually mostly sad because of her abortion, and it's like, oh my god, like,
yes,
pick something.
And this is why I was so angry, is because then it shifts everything to make it look like the reason that Sadie was depressed in that point of her life is because of the abortion and not because of the extremely toxic, unequal, and manipulative relationship that she was in. And I was like, those were kinds of relationships I feel like psychologically actually really fuck people up, where you admire and respect and depend on someone, and then they sort of use that trust and the admiration you have for them to prey on you. Sadie was old enough to consent, so I'm not saying that it was like fundamentally like predatory, but it also kind of was, because he was like deliberately using his station as someone she admired and respected to then have a sexual relationship with her. And I was like, when that person has all the power in your relationship and gets to completely dictate your life and then disappears on you and disappoints you, that's enough of a reason to be depressed. And that is enough of a reason to like need support and to like have significant trust issues and to be psychologically impacted. The abortion almost just didn't make sense. I was like, where is this coming from? And then it's never even like picked up again. Yeah. And
holy trigger warning, thanks for like just throwing that in. Yeah. For anyone who has trauma in that realm of,
yeah, it really, like you said, Casey, I think you hit the nail on the head. Like, you can be depressed about the end of a relationship without like, I, that totally was valid for me, like her being depressed because of, yeah, that very abusive, mentally abusive relationship and the balance of power and the fact that like this was her first adult relationship. Like, reminder, she started dating her professor while they were in class. while he was grading her shit, and then continue to have a long relationship while he's married, has a kid, and is continuing to like degrade her almost with her, like his ideas of like women and his ideas of like gaming and like her future. Like, you can be depressed about the end of that relationship.
Like, you can be depressed about being in that relationship.
Yeah, exactly. But like, it almost seemed like it was trying to justify her, the period there when they said like, oh, the abortion is the reason why she was so, so depressed. It's like, no, she could have just like, that was believable. She could have been depressed just because this relationship ended and she didn't like, she didn't love like how that turned out. And
yes,
I don't believe in using like that kind of stuff as a crutch or a plot device without like really thinking that through, because this impacts a lot of women across the country. And I think you have to really be careful about these stories and not to like traumatize or negate people's experiences.
That's what it felt, honestly, a little offensive to me, because it felt tossed in. Like, oh, here's one more thing we can just like have had this happen because it's bad or something. Like, I was like, if you have that be like an authentic part of someone's experience, I think it should feel like an authentic part of the experience. And that leads me to the last thing that I really didn't like about the book. And that brings me to the shooting, where I felt at times this author was just trying to pile on as much random traumatic bullshit as possible. Like, Sadie's little sister already had cancer. Sadie and Sam already had a falling out over her, like, you know, their poor choices when they're kids. Sadie has already been in like a very sketchy, manipulative relationship, and apparently also had an abortion and gone through depression because of all of this emotional fallout. And Sam has lost his parents, has seen a woman die, has had foot problems that cause him persistent chronic pain, and then he has to get it amputated, and then he falls into a depression and has like these chronic pain episodes following. And it's like, I think there's enough. I think the story has enough. The shooting felt like some weird other, like, let's pile on one more fucking traumatic ass thing just to make the story as dramatic as possible. And I kind of didn't appreciate that. I just felt like, again, if you put these things in a story, they should actually like fully explore the impact of them.
So I have like a theory on the shooting. I feel like the author needed an excuse to kill off or get rid of Marks so that the idea or the possibility of Sadie and Sam at the end of the book could be a romantic relationship. As soon as like Sam started admitting his feelings when they got together and was like, mm-hmm, I really love her, I was like, okay, Marks is going to disappear or something. Like, he has to.
I thought, this is the rant. I've been saving so many rants for this book. I'm sorry. This podcast episode is just going to be me ranting. I'm so tired of these, of every other character in the book being incredibly flawed and then having one perfect character that you're saving for the right time to murder. Like, Marks could have also been a complex, integral character, and he just kind of felt like this like perfect little soft boy to me. Like, he never does anything wrong. He's really the person keeping the gang together. He's balancing all of Sadie's weird issues and all of Sam's weird issues. But I totally agree. And it also made me mad because I think it's a total cop-out. If you have to just sporadically murder characters in order to like free them up, I think it kind of lets characters off the hook to actually have any meaningful development. Because meaningful character development would have been, I love all these people and I just kind of have to live with the choices that I made when I was young and dealing with a lot and move on with my life, and not just, well, now the person in my way of being with the love of my life is fucking dead, so that's easy.
Yeah.
I enjoyed Marks. I didn't enjoy how he complicated Sam and Sadie's already complicated relationship. I didn't want that love triangle to happen. So, and I agree, like, I think killing him was kind of an excuse to reforge Salmon City, which didn't even happen. And I don't know, it was kind of traumatic, like you said. It was a lot just on top of each other. I thought it was beautifully written how they were coping with the trauma, like very realistic while frustrating to read. It's because it was kind of realistic. And I don't know, I was sad Marks died. I just wanted him to keep being like the friend that kept them together. And instead it got too complicated for what I preferred.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Honestly, like, I wasn't that sad that Marks died. And that's normally not a good sign for a book. Like, I'm like a crier, so I cry during books. Mm-hmm. I was nowhere near tears when this happened. And your description of him, Casey, just reminded me of the fact that he thinks of himself as an NPC. And he is an NPC. That is literally what he is in this book, is an NPC. Mm-hmm. He moves the story forward or the storyline forward, but has no like depth.
Yes. And I am fundamentally against those characters. Every character in your book should be a main character.
Yeah.
It's unfair and it's weak writing to have someone that just exists for the plot. And honestly, Marks deserved better because I also liked him. And he just ends up being this useless plot device in Sam and Sadie's story. Like, if you introduce a character, you have to stand by that character and you have to make them an equal part of the book. And I felt like he was just sort of like tossed in and then thrown out whenever convenient.
I also liked him and Zoe.
Like, yeah, I did too.
They're kind of this free spirit, creative couple who get Sam and Sadie together, like as business partners. So I liked that. I was sad to see Zoe go. And then I knew where it was going. And I was like, damn it.
Yeah. And I also wasn't sad when Marks died because I was waiting for it the whole time. I was like, somehow they have to get rid of him. So,
yeah.
What did y'all think? And I think we were alluding to a section of which the pacing slowed down very abruptly.
Oh, the video game.
Yeah.
In Pioneer Town, whatever the hell it was.
So I have two sections where it slowed down. It was Marks's NPC, like, long ass section where he's like slowly dying. And not to say that wasn't beautifully written and I didn't like it, but it did slow the pacing down. Then the second one, which I think we're all thinking of, is the Pioneer video game, where it's like you're in the video game. You pretty much know it's Sadie who's playing it, just judging by the character name. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's her dead fiance slash baby daddy slash first name as her last name, and then Emily for Emily Dickinson. Like, we all knew. And then she's going through as if she is this character. So, thoughts?
And you know the other two are Sam. You're like,
you do the whole time.
It's obvious.
Which, like, she ends up saying, like, I knew it was him and I just let it happen, basically. But I was like, this is so long and drawn out. You could have summed this up in like a couple pages and we could have moved on.
Yeah. I was like, boring, boring, boring. I started skimming. It was so slow. I was just like, we all really did not need this. I also honestly question that they needed it in the book at all, because at this point, the book starts to feel kind of long. And also, this is like the cherry on top of the cake of when like Sadie makes no sense to me, is that then she gets really mad at Sam for doing this. And I'm like, Sam also lost his best friend. Like, I understand that grief makes you selfish. I think that's very true. But it was also to the extent, like, you've also fully abandoned Sam and all the other people who loved Marks. And now Sam, like, makes this, like, last-ditch effort because he's desperate to try and reconnect with you. And you're like, you lied to me. I was like, girl, you are crazy. There is something wrong with you.
Yeah, like, you should have thought of this as, like loving, like, he created the safe space for you to be able to come after Marx's death
as a last ditch effort, because you completely shut him out.
This was also the part I found the most unrealistic. If we're talking video games, you can't sit in a video game and like craft little glass animals or like make checkerboard games or write books or whatever the hell. Like, that's entirely too complicated and would never sell. You could never put your time and energy into that. Like,
yeah,
it just wouldn't have happened despite like Sam's love for Sadie and trying to help her out of her depression. Like, that was entirely unrealistic. If you've played a video game, that's not how that works.
Yeah, it would take so many unique actions that every time he got on, he'd have to reinvent the code. Like,
yeah, essentially.
Oh, and then the like fake marks or whatever, the old man marks in the game or whatever. Oh, that was so weird. Anyway, yeah. I think that's the one part I referenced earlier that could be portrayed pretty cool in a movie, because you wouldn't need any like voice. You could kind of program it out, but also I think it's just too complicated and unrealistic. And it was like reading a whole mini book inside a book. And I was like, please make it stop.
Yeah. It also just left me with so many questions about Sadie as a mother. Like, she has a daughter now. Like, where does she get this free time? She's a single parent.
And also, what is Sam doing that every time Sadie logs on, he like rushes to his computer to be on the game at the same time as her? Like, he had to actually play the character. So I was like, you two are both unwell, like deeply unwell, because you're playing this game too much. And the fact that you are like are both adults with lives and responsibilities who can somehow like get in this game for hours together at the same time is just really, I don't get it.
Yeah, well, we're also not gamers, so.
Yeah, maybe gamers are like, everybody games for hours. Like, when you're an adult, you just do it from like 1 a.m. to 3 a.m.
But single parents?
Yeah.
The toddlers?
Single parents and someone who's now single-handedly running a large gaming company when he had never previously run it before.
Right. Yeah. Like, I love Animal Crossing, but you can only chop so much wood.
Yeah. Even in The Sims, there's limited actions you can take. You can't just do whatever you want. You can't just carve blocks. Like,
yeah, even RPGs are not like unlimited. I don't know.
No.
Yeah.
Anyway, I want to get out of this stupid video game discussion and talk about, I was reading this book ahead of the other two, and I was like halfway through or three quarters of the way through, and I remember texting them like, I still don't know what the title means. And it was starting to really frustrate me. And then at the end you learn it's a Macbeth quote that Marx loves, and tomorrow is part of it. Anyway, what did you think? Because I still just don't super get it.
I also don't super get it. I read a negative review. It was too long and too negative for me to use it as my review, but it mentioned this thing that I distinctly remember thinking in the book, which is like, why? And he was talking about how he didn't like that the book made like every conversation between gamers be like, oh, you want to, that's your gamer brain. That's you as a game designer. The fact that you always want to keep trying or something. And he was like, this is fucking stupid. Everyone's brain works like this, no matter what. And that's kind of how I felt about this moment. Is I was like, this is not fucking unique to gamers. Like, what? Yes. Everyone has to get up every day and also act like it's like, a new day.
It's Shakespeare.
Yeah, I didn't mean didn't exist. Like, why they kept bringing in Shakespeare with Marx, but I was also like, I don't get the connection to gaming. Also, like, I can read a Shakespeare book, but I don't enjoy it, and it doesn't like resonate well with me. And so this didn't resonate.
Yeah, I can say I've never read Macbeth, but from what I understand of the quote, it's just like you live by tomorrow. And that's what everyone does, is they live by the present and the future of tomorrow. Like,
I saw the play Macbeth and couldn't tell you what it was about.
Cool.
The only thing I know about it is it's the Scottish one.
Yep.
I think I kept trying to like draw memories, and all I was getting was reading Hamlet, and I get them all confused because they're all, I don't know.
Shakespeare.
So, yeah. So I was like, props to you, Marx, for being sophisticated. But first of all, I still don't really get the title. And second, why did you wait until like the literal very end of the book to approach that, like, you could have talked about respawning and second chances the whole time and made it a lot more clear without using an obscure Shakespeare quote.
Yeah, it was really trying to, like, say this profound message about life, especially with Marx's death and stuff, of just like, this is the end of the line kind of thing. You can't just restart. But, like, at the same time, it didn't totally hit the mark there. Yeah. And I don't necessarily want to read that.
Bringing that random couple and the ladies, like, hey, did you see this Easter egg in the game? And that's how you come about all of this. And you're like, these were unnecessary characters. You could have got to it some other way. This was stupid.
Yeah. I agree. I don't have a lot else to say other than I was also like, this moment is not impacting me. It was one of the few times I also saw a lot of negative reviews that were saying they felt like the book was pretentious. By and large, I did not feel like the book was pretentious, except in these moments when they were trying really hard to connect Shakespeare to gaming. And I was like, look, we can let it go. Like, we don't have to connect to like some sort of medieval interest to legitimize video games. Like,
just because it's Harvard and MIT doesn't mean you need to quote sophisticated smart things.
Yeah, it's like we all know
they're already smart
person who went to an Ivy League, and none of them quote Shakespeare.
No. Well, I guess to sort of wrap up the discussion, you know, it leaves it open ended at the end. Like, Sam and Sadie, Sam's like, I still want to make together a game together, and Sadie gives him a sample, and it's just like the very beginning of the book, and it's full circle. What's gonna happen to Sam and Sadie? What do we think? I don't really care, honestly.
I also don't care. I choose to believe that there will not be a romantic relationship, because I think in my ideal world they kind of la-la land this stuff, which is to say that, like, not everything is forgivable and you can't undo your history with someone. And like, at a certain point, like, you are too far past the time when like that could have happened. And now there's too much other stuff like in the way, you know, like, there's a point in this book where these people like legitimately hate each other despite allegedly being friends. And so I'm like, I choose for my own peace of mind to believe that they repair the friendship and do not ever become romantic partners.
Yeah. I choose to believe that they might make another video game together. Just maybe it's not in the same vein, more of like as creative directors and not like actually in the trenches of programming, but like game designing of like the more big, like bigger higher ups. Mm-hmm. I could see that. But yeah, I agree. A romantic relationship between them just doesn't make sense based on their history. Like, I totally could see them becoming close friends and bonding over their life experience, but they're in so different of places. And I wouldn't blame Sadie if she never dated another man again, because like, Lord almighty, has she had terrible shit luck.
And she now lives across the country from him. I was like, if you wanted to repair that relationship, that was stupid. To write in. And I don't know, I thought it was kind of nice that they're this one company was like, we want to make Ikigo 3 and want you to console. I was like, end it right there. That's fine.
Yeah, I don't know. I do like think it looks like they'll make another game together. But like, you know, maybe Sam will join Sadie in some of her like new tech stuff that she's doing. And they'll kind of make something that's not quite a video game, but like something new.
Well, there you have it. While the writing was beautiful, the book was kind of weird.
We obviously disagreed with parts of the book.
Yeah.
I can see where people find it kind of wholesome, because I don't know, it's like a very realistic picture of a relationship for the most part. I mean, some parts are taken extreme. We've talked about that, but it's written like you're thinking through a relationship in your head, and I feel like that just makes it more personal, I guess. I don't know if that was a very wise takeaway, but
that's what we've got.
I don't know if it actually made sense when it came out of my mouth. So there you go. I confused myself by this book.
This book confused us and is confusing ourselves.
Yeah. But the writing was lovely.
The writing was lovely.
We can all agree on that. So we're actually kind of all in the minority. There are lots of people who like fucking ride or die that this book is the best book of the year. I think it actually won Goodreads Book of the Year. Like, people are rabid about this book. So if you think we're wrong, let us know why. Let us know what we missed. And so you should rate and review the podcast. And then follow us on social media. We are at Busy Girls Pod almost everywhere.
Yep. So let us know your thoughts. Maybe shoot us some video games you think we need to play to understand the book. We probably won't play them because we're busy, but you know, it doesn't matter. And with that, I'm Caitlin.
I'm Catherine.
I'm Casey. Thanks for listening. And when you get the chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.